I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Get magma at sospresents.com. Get magma.
Hello and welcome to Two in the Think Tank. You know what I think is a testament to our musical ability, Alistair?
What's that?
It's the fact that no listener has ever tried to do a remix of any of these intro songs. Any other podcast, you do even the slightest little, you know, sing-along, something like that. Some listener somewhere will be like, will then use their musical skills in GarageBand and turn it into some sick beat and send it into you. We've been doing one or two in every single episode, at least since the start. And
not one and no can one, be. Can be edited into something that sounds good.
But in the way that you can paint with negative space, Alistair, we are, by the end of the run, of when Two in the Think Tank finishes, the space left behind by all the non-music we've created will be the most beautiful song of all time. And I don't know if you can put all music through some kind of conceptual inversion filter on Audacity, on or Adobe Audition, but if they have that processing ability, someone should really look into that, because it's going to be a real, whatever the opposite of an opus is, an opposite.
So like conceptual inversion. So like if it's a... If you put a bird into it, it becomes a fish.
Exactly.
If your artwork was a bird.
Yes. Yes, it would become an actual fish. So you put in a painting of a bird, a thing that is not a real thing, but just a piece of art. And the opposite of that is a real thing. Ah, but it further than that, it creates the opposite of the thing that is depicted. Thus, the opposite of a not real bird is a yes real fish.
Yeah. So if for some reason you missed your grandfather who passed away,
yes, you shove your grandma.
You paint your grandma dead. Who
yes,
might still be alive,
good,
but you
good.
Do a painting of your grandma dead. Don't worry about having to explain that to her.
Eric, what is that you're doing there?
Oh, it's a
nothing,
painting
grandma.
Of your funeral. Don't look at it, grandma. Don't worry about it. I'm just doing something.
But for your information, I am painting you very not sexy.
Oh, because you want your grandfather to come back really sexy?
Well, why not? Do him a favor. You know, if you're dragging him back from the realm of, you know, of the great beyond, you might as well do a little bit of value adding.
I know, but imagine the trouble you might be causing for your grandma, who has been missing him for the last 25 years. Right?
He's been gone a while.
Eh? He comes
He's been
back
gone a while.
Super sexy. They hang out. They have that kiss where they're like, oh, I've missed you and things like that. She's a fair bit older than he is now. And then suddenly he's like pretty sexy and he realizes he's being held back a fair bit by this wife that he once had. But also now he's gone through death and returned.
and getting a different perspective on things.
Yeah. And so he starts playing the field a little bit, you know, bringing women home to the house where his grandma, the grandma is. Things
yeah,
like that.
Okay. He calls her grandma now.
He calls her grandma because it was that kind of couple where they call each other pa and ma.
It's if it's sexy to call somebody daddy in bed, which I'm not saying it is, but if it is, then surely grandpa is even sexier. That's all I'm saying. Yes. Great granddad, I say during sex.
Yeah.
Call me great granddad.
Who's your long lost ancestor?
Who's the first chimp to ever walk upright?
Mm-hmm.
That's right. I want you to call me a single-celled proto ancestor.
Who's the first? Yeah. Who's the first non-living amino acids that came together to form a single-celled organism?
Capable of replicating itself.
By the way, who's your
ah?
Who's your non-living amino acids that came together to form?
This is got to be something, right? Is this something? this is how
I think already the conceptual inverter, I think, is something.
Wow. Okay. I mean, I'm interested to know why a conceptual inverter exists. Like, why we're trying to bring things into reality via a conceptual inverter.
Well,
why don't
I think
we just make the thing?
I think that that's a side. It's a side. It's like a side symptom of having made this thing, which was just somebody just trying to make like a bit of audio editing, but for visual art, you know, like a bit of audio editing software for visual art.
Or it could be that, like, you know, this is the sort of thing that would be developed by medical researchers, right? And they'd be like, okay, well, this is great. We've found a way to come up with anti-venoms for snake bites by you just put in the poison and it conceptually inverts it and spits out the anti-venom, the cure, right? But then they accidentally put something else in there, realize it inverts anything. And then late one night, a guy who's missing his granddad comes in with a painting of his, of a very not sexy dead grandma and puts it in because he's abusing the technology.
Maybe he steals the machine and brings it home. Where he lives alone with his grandma.
Okay, great.
Because he wants to help her, but that involves painting a really non-sexy dead version of her.
Yep.
And then I've also written down, who's your long lost?
Yeah, great. Because dead ancestor. What we're doing there is we're amplifying things in the bedroom. We're turning up the pillow talk. To
11, Andy.
I wasn't going to say it because that was the thing. Because I was going to say it, and then I felt bad. So because
then you felt like it was somebody else's line. It was just another. Yeah. It was just a thing that people say now.
Mm.
It was a bit of joke in a movie.
A very good bit of joke, absolutely, but. No, I can't be doing that. Alistair, I presume I've got dad bod now. But what did I have before I had dad bod? Did
Andy?
I still have son bod? Or just
Well, I
bod?
Think, Andy, what happened... Look, in the years that I've known your bod, I don't feel like it has fluctuated that much.
Mm.
But I knew you before the term dad bod existed.
Yes.
So back then it was just a bod. You know, you were just a guy with a body, and there was no category. Like before we were ever able to separate green from yellows
blue.
And blues, right?
Because we didn't have the word for the thing.
We didn't
the
have
thing
the word.
Did not exist. This is like George Orwell's 1984 all over again, all over again. Because, you know, in that they try to remove, am I right? Is it that one? Where they try to change the language in order to change people, to stop people being able to even conceive of such ideas as rebellion and that sort of thing. They remove those words from the language. And so it is with dad bod. Before the word dad bod, dads just existed as an amorphous concept. I've used the word concept too much in this podcast. But they were an undefined haze of male personhood. And then
if you put it through the conceptual inverter, it's actually mother spirit. Gaia. The opposite of dad bod is Gaia.
I think, well, what if there was a second Gaia, right? What if Earth had two Earth spirits?
Okay.
Okay. And then we're in a kind of a, like a two queens in a beehive kind of scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And they go at each other.
Yeah.
Stalking one another all over the Earth.
And like the orchids and the dandelions all have to pick sides.
Exactly. Yes. They get the various beautiful and delicate things of the creatures of the field, birds of the air, pull them all together into posses, basically, and then wail on each other, including with whales.
With whales, especially, yeah. Mm. One's got sperm, the other one's got blue. And they just grab him by that tail. How satisfying would it be to grab a whale by the tail?
So... and just, deeply like, satisfied.
Where the you know, like the wide bit of the tail right at the end is under your hand. So it's like a, you know, kind of like a reversed sword hilt.
Mm. Yep.
You know, but at the bottom so that you can swing it and it stays clean in your hand. I'm assuming that these guys are huge.
If they didn't include this as a thing in Pacific Rim, they absolutely should have.
Yeah.
Right? Because wasn't that basically giant mechanical monsters coming out of the ocean and then fighting each other? I haven't seen it, but I think that's what it was.
Yeah, I haven't seen the whole thing. I've seen
ever
like, you know,
there
snippets.
Was an excuse for somebody to swing a sperm whale by the hilt.
Where would the other guy be from? Would it just a new one has emerged?
Yeah, well, I mean, if we created one by accident, or we accidentally cloned Gaia, maybe, and then they
imagine if there's a giant cave, a giant subterranean cave somewhere, and near the mantle that you can only access through some very important, you know, hole in the ground of some sort that you have to go through some journey and the instructions to get there, you know, probably used to belong to some ancient, you know, I don't know, Celtic tribe or something like that, or some
probably, yeah,
Thai tribe or something. I'm trying to not make this about another culture so that I don't make
well,
generalizations.
It could be encoded into our DNA. We could find clues in.
It was probably but it was an oral tradition that was lost. But then somebody came across the cave and, you know, some cavers probably. Maybe
that sounds maybe like the spelunking.
Maybe the cavers who saved the Thai kids, the Thai soccer team.
Mm.
The one that Elon Musk called a pedophile. we could cast him in this movie. So he goes down into this cave and he finds there's like something in there that he does something with some rune. Accidentally drops a rune into some, you know, hole.
Crevice, yeah, another hole within the hole.
And it activates the thing that we would have known if we had kept the oral tradition going. And it creates a new Gaia, but that's normally only there for if Gaia dies.
If your first Gaia dies,
yeah.
then but you can now get a second Gaia.
Now we got a second Gaia.
But and you'd think they'd get along because they have so much in common, but you know what it's like when you have a thing and then someone comes along and they also have that thing.
Yeah.
And that you naturally hate them straight away.
There's only
so it is with Gaias.
There can only be one Alpha Gaia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then it is on. And it's very the way they battle, it's very earthy, it's very natural, but it's extremely violent.
Mm. And it is using lots of nature stuff, lots of like uprooting trees and charging at each other and trying to drown the other one in the ocean. Like in the you know, what's that big crevice that's really deep?
The Mariana Trench. Marinara
Trench.
That doesn't sound right.
That would make more sense.
It would make more sense. I would call it that, but I think it might be Mariana.
No, you're right. But if you were an Italian restaurant,
yes,
and you had some giant V-shaped bowl of spaghetti that was like, can you finish this bowl in an hour? It's called the Marinara Trench. It's the deepest bowl of spaghetti in all of Little Italy.
Oh, that's so good. And the different layers of the bowl represent the different layers in the ocean. And the different that you at the bottom, very bottom of the bowl, you're eating these bizarre anglerfish and strange sort of sea worms that just like subsist there.
A lot of see-through creatures.
Yeah, these. I love it. I love it. I love it. It's a cross section of marine life to the deepest point on Earth, the Marinara Trench.
But really, all it is just an eating competition, you know, an eating challenge in a Italian restaurant in Little Italy.
Yeah. Now, what would you do? Would you try and eat straight down, reach the bottom, and then sort of eat out? Or would, I guess, you'd just go layer by layer?
Yeah, because what are you going to do? Waste time doing some early drilling just so you can access the down low stuff? You got to eat it all in the end anyway.
Have you put the Marinara Trench down as a sketch idea?
Of course. Of course it's
yes.
down.
Yes. I'm so glad. I'm so glad, and so is everybody else.
Yeah. I mean, because you got to eat your way down if you want to have your photo on the wall and you want to get the T-shirt.
I mean, once we know that the Marinara Trench is the deepest point on Earth. Now, there must be bits in the Marinara Trench that are deeper than others, right? Now, what you could do, though, like, say somebody goes down there, right, down to the bottom, and they say, I've been there now. I was the first one to go down. That's it. Done. I went to the deepest point on Earth. You just go down with a little shovel or whatever on your submarine, dig it out a bit, nestle into that little divot, and then you're deeper.
That's
you say,
true.
Sorry, no. I've
sorry,
created
buddy.
A sub-trench, a mini Marinara trench.
I call it the Eric Trench.
And it's deeper by a good inch. So, sorry.
I don't know
sorry,
why.
I'll have that award.
I don't know what this was, but this was something that entered my mind. You know this idea? Because we had a baby in the last 6 weeks or so, maybe almost 7 weeks. And shout out to Huxley, if I've died and you're listening to this.
Shout out to my boy.
And it's like, you know, it's 2040 and you're listening to this. Just shout out to Hux. I was very proud of you. And sorry that I didn't get to see your 20th birthday. And hi to Otis as well. But you got to spend a fair bit of time with me. So this idea was, because what's happened is that we've had this baby for a while, but we've forgotten to fill out all the paperwork.
Is that actually true?
Yeah, that is actually true.
Okay.
And so
Great.
And so he's not like officially...
So he's not technically yours at this
he's
point.
Not officially like... I mean, obviously, if you give birth in the hospital, he's on the grid, right? He's in the grid.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, he's in but the I guess system. Somebody who tries... Like somebody whose parents kept him off the grid did a home birth.
Mm.
And then tried to remain... off the grid for the rest of their life because maybe they felt that that was important. May at
I
some
hope
point...
they thought it was important.
Yeah.
I mean, I assume for them to go through with it, they thought it was important. Maybe no, they didn't.
I think if you got older and you were like, actually, this is a huge hassle, you could just go onto the grid. But
yeah. I think there are some people who have found that very difficult. I think there are some situations where people, for whatever reason, weren't registered with birth certificates. And it later on turns out to be a huge nightmare for them.
Yeah. Well, it would be. And also then if you become a person, according to the government, you're probably going to get your parents fined. You know, like they're probably going to get in trouble.
Yeah.
And so then you're like, well, I don't want to get my parents in trouble, but I would love to be able to leave the country.
You know, everyone complains about certificates of participation, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, you get a certificate just for participating. Mate, you get a certificate just for being born. Yeah. You haven't done shit.
Oh, mate, that's kids these
you
days.
You literally haven't even done a shit yet.
You haven't done a shit yet. What you've done is called a muconium. A meconium.
Yes.
That's just like this weird black tar stuff. Didn't people know that the first shit is just this...
You know that bodybuilders, they love to get that first little shit, the meconium.
Oh, bodybuilders, they love that first shit and they rub it all over their body and their buddy. Cause they
and
love
their
to
buddies,
shit.
If they're nice, like that.
Okay, so what about, this is what the idea was, right?
Yeah.
It's these people who, they're midlife, they're like sort of like born again Christians, but they're not Christians, they know a hacker and they've managed to find a way to go off the grid in the middle of their lives, right?
Mm.
But they've put a lot of ceremony around this, and so they decide you have to get rid of all your possessions. You can't be connected to anything. And you start completely naked, right?
Yes.
You don't have any bank cards,
like
you don't have any money.
This actually sounds really good.
Yeah, you don't have any money, right? You don't have a place of residence. You start again and you're in the city. Right?
Oh, and that's handy.
And the best place to start getting clothes for free is to go to restaurants with eating competitions, like eating challenges, and beat it and get the t-shirt for
Okay.
And sure, at the beginning, that very first one is the hardest one, where you have to get them to let you in completely naked.
No shirt.
No
shoes, no pants.
No pants.
No socks. No identity. No money.
But absolutely.
No service.
But you just got to carry yourself in a way with the confidence of a guy who can eat sort of 3.5 kilos of steak in one sitting.
This is the perfect place to start because not only do you have a free t-shirt so you can cover your upper body, the most disgusting half of the body, but you also have a full stomach, you know? What a great place to start.
That's right. Yeah,
I think,
exactly.
You know, in when Terminator, when he appears in that, dock area, teleports in through time, the Terminator, and then he goes into a bikey bar and he just steals somebody's bike. And
but he probably had heard that there was some like eat 12 prawn cocktails and you get a pair of shorts for free.
Well, in the first draft of the movie, the Terminator. Yeah. He went in there and there was an eating competition and he ate lots of steak and got a free t-shirt and then walked around the rest of the wearing a t-shirt that says, I ate 3.5 kilograms of steak at Marty's T-Bone Steakhouse.
And
biker bar. And all I got was this lousy t-shirt. But it was thought that the exposed genitals of the Terminator.
Yeah. And also, instead of the clean...
A lot of the chase scenes are very different vibes.
Just super intense to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess they felt like the line, I need to enter your eating competition, was less clean than I need your clothes.
Is that anything?
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is all... yeah, this is all there. It's all written. I've got the off the grid new t-shirt. I can put in brackets.
I love the idea because obviously the Terminator robot had programmed into his programming this sort of approach that, like, you know, one of the first things you have to do is get, you know, clothes and that sort of thing so you can blend in.
Of course.
But I do, you know, this program was written by computers in the future, and they wouldn't have known all the details of how society worked. They would have had some historical references to go by. Mm-hmm. I think it's, you know, very possible that, you know, they would have been searching through digital records and they would have found evidence of free t-shirts being given out at eating competitions. And for whatever reason, because of the, you know, other files have been deleted or whatever, they decide that that's the most dominant and likely and appropriate way to approach getting clothes.
That's right. In the same way that, like, a Google Maps algorithm will sometimes take you down a one-way street.
Exactly. Or into a lake.
Yeah. Just take this lake to get there. Yeah. And so it just thinks, it goes, look, there's less confrontation. We know that your robotic stomach is able to withstand more impact than a human stomach.
Yeah. We actually went to a lot of effort to build a stomach that's capable
that could
of
take
winning
12 to 13 prawn cocktails. Minimum. It's sorry.
Wait. Minimum. Yes, I wasn't listening, but that's very funny.
But I mean, in a way, that's just that joke. I didn't think about it at the time, but it's that joke from The Simpsons of, you know, that bomb, when they were going to buy the bomb shelter, and they go, you know, that guy with the, what was the name of the guy with the one sleeve that was wrapped up who owned the kind of like military disposals kind of shop?
Yeah.
Remember that guy? Anyway, but he was selling those bomb shelters, and he goes, and this baby will take, you know, something like 2 megatons, no more, no less.
Less. That's a really good joke, but to me that is a different joke.
Okay.
That is a different joke.
Yeah.
I think your one, 13 to 14 prawn cocktails minimum. For a start, the fact that there's a range and it's a minimum is insane. But what that means is that the Terminator can't function unless he has at least 13 prawn cocktails in his stomach. And then, like, you know, when he's being crushed by that giant battering ram in the metal factory at the end, and his body finds some alternative energy path or whatever to reroute, what that would have to be would be him having the prawn cocktail squeezed out of him.
Yeah.
And then, fortunately, then he is able to reach another prawn cocktail just slightly further away.
Hold up. Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is kind of like, for some reason, you know, the horsepower.
Yeah.
You know, we defined a unit of energy based on the power of a horse, which it's a shame we don't define any of our other attributes.
Sure.
Relative to a horse, I think, you know, charm. Beauty. We're in a very similar area. Mm. This is a unit of food that is defined by the prawn cocktail. I can't really remember why I thought that was so funny when I started the sentence. I've very much lost interest now, Alistair.
I'm just writing down. I don't think this will ever make sense, and I don't think we'll ever be able to find the context in which it will be as funny as it felt, but the 12 cocktails minimum, I've just written that down as a sort of half idea. It's nothing.
Well, what about when you go to a comedy club and it's like a 3-drink minimum or something like that, but it's just a really high number and it's prawn cocktails. This comedy club, I mean, they have good acts on, but it's a real. I don't like the way it's set up there. They have a 13 prawn cocktail minimum.
And they don't like waste. Like, that is quite funny. It's like, look, it's $10 entry, but you got to buy 12 prawn cocktails minimum. People are just eating their way through these prawns and these and all that sauce. Trying to eat all the sauce with a spoon.
And it's a comedy gig.
people are vomiting.
Laughing and vomiting.
Bah, bah, bah.
And there's no way that you can keep that quantity of prawns fresh without there being accidents.
Accidents. Like just one bag that was left in the back of the fridge that was forgotten.
Well, yeah. Absolutely. It's a lot to keep track of.
You're right.
Prawn freshness monitoring software would have to be so high powered.
And you're a comedy club. You don't have that much money coming in.
You don't. And they're very dimly lit. And I feel like that it probably extends to the kitchen. And I think there's probably a lot of grot, a lot of grime.
Do you think the bags will be so covered in grime?
Yes. And I also think that, you know, you don't become the chef at a comedy club if you care that much about food. I mean, you must, right? Because sure. People are there for the comedy, you know, and they're not going to be paying that much attention to the food. They can't discuss it. They can't express how much they're enjoying it.
Sure.
Without being heckled or without being shouted at by the comedian.
Yep.
And so, like, what you, as a chef, you'd have to be able to subsist with so little external validation. It's very interesting because the comedians on stage are exactly the people from society who need so much validation that they're just sucking up all the available validation in the area at the expense of the chefs who might occasionally want to hear a kind word or hear people discussing how much they're enjoying the wedges with sweet chili and sour cream.
In this case, it's the one of 12 prawn cocktails that each person is going to eat, and he doesn't realize that because he's not getting that validation, how important it is for him to keep trying hard because of the quantity of prawn cocktails people are having to eat. Each person is eating like 6 or 7 prawns per cocktail, and a whole bunch of sauce that has to stay for seafood sauce. It has to stay fresh. I think a comedy club with a 12 prawn cocktail minimum is a really funny idea.
How have we come up with two large quantities of seafood sketches? Totally unrelated.
I feel like they were back to back. They were like Forrest Gump and Bubba, just sitting there with their...
That's another shrimp reference.
What's another what? That's another shrimp reference, isn't it? Well, I was just talking about them with their two backs up against each other so that their heads don't have to, they don't have to lay with their heads in the mud. But also they open up a shrimp restaurant and it's like that in that way.
But mostly for me, the similarity.
To be honest, I wasn't thinking about the shrimp thing at all.
I know you weren't. I know you weren't, but I feel that your brain was primed.
I want you to know that my idea was pure and I wasn't trying to make any kind of connections other than a conceptual
one. And that's what I love about your ideas. They remain pure by not being connected to anything, Alistair.
That's right.
They've attained that essential, beautiful innocence of a truly insane idea that it can't be connected
you
to
can't trace
anything.
It to anything.
No, you can't contextualize.
How can something be insane and innocent at the same time?
Well, I feel like that's babies to a large extent. Yeah,
I don't know. They don't babies are really
right,
you
can just... be insane and innocent because you can plead insanity and that makes you innocent, doesn't it?
Oh,
isn't
yeah.
that the entire that's the biggest loophole?
do you think that's a loophole we need to fix? All right, just
let's see.
How about the lawyer gets up? Let's cut the shit. All right. Insanity, that's not enough to get off, is it? Really? It's just a little trick.
It feels like a little bit of a cosmic technicality.
It feels like somebody got away with it and then... But I mean, I don't know if going to a
high security mental
institution facility is better. I mean, maybe it's way better.
Yeah,
I guess the people who are making this decision are probably aware that it's way better than being around murderers.
Well, yeah.
What about a third option? Do you think there's a third way out, a third loophole?
So hang on. Let's go through the loopholes, as you call them, Alistair. One of them's insanity. Presumably the other loophole that you've got to get to two loopholes is innocence.
Done it. Oh, what a loophole.
I'll tell you, this lawyer he's got, he is shameless. He'll use any old trick.
But what about... I was asleep at the time. People have used that, surely, right?
I'm sure they have. And what does... I mean, it's a
pretty
good one,
isn't it? They can't send you to a mental institution for that.
No. I mean, they might send you to a sleep school.
Sleep school? Maybe one of those ones where they just watch you overnight?
Yeah.
You know? It's a good defense.
It's a really good defense.
Yeah. And that just means when you're killing somebody, all you gotta do is keep your eyes closed.
We were talking a while ago about some sort of murder that involved blood. I can't remember what it was. There was something about blood. Yeah. And then I had an idea that, you know, like the one... Oh, that's right. We were talking about knives that have that are both trick knives and real knives, and they have a bit of extra blood in there, so that you both stab somebody for real, and it squirts out some more blood.
Yeah, it'd be extra satisfying.
You know, do you know like that old riddle or whatever it is that's like somebody gets stabbed with a knife made out of ice?
Yeah.
I say knife made out of frozen blood.
So, wait, it's somebody else's blood?
No, you'd have to get the blood of the victim, I think. So I think maybe you sneak in and you steal it from them while they're sleeping the night before or something, or you steal it from a blood bank, perhaps, where they've donated blood, and then you freeze it into a knife and stab them with their own blood. I think that's probably not even a crime. What is the crime?
What is the crime?
Putting his blood into his body?
Stabbing somebody with a knife made of blood? That sounds... Do you understand how insane you sound?
I'm going to declare you innocent because you were insane.
I think maybe I could be let off. Yeah, because you guys are insane.
I'm the only not crazy one here. But blood knife. Like, do you think that...
Yeah.
Are there any advantages to stabbing somebody with a knife? Like,
well, then you'll have their blood all over your hands when it melts.
That is true.
That is a big disadvantage. And you probably have all over your kitchen and stuff like that. And through your freezer and stuff.
Yes. Yeah, okay. I thought there'd be less evidence. This is my idea with stabbing them with a knife made from their own blood would be that there's less evidence to link you to the crime. But you found a loophole in my loophole there, Alistair. and not to forget your knife shaped popsicle mold.
Yeah. Yeah, which guess you put
they really
carved
shouldn't
in
sell
your garage.
Those. That's not okay. In the home section in Woolworths.
But I think the idea of somebody who's done this thinking that it was the greatest idea ever, and then realizing that it's the failure it is.
It could be a Sherlock Holmes big reveal. He's won, but In all great crimes, the criminal makes one fatal mistake.
Or in this guy's case. I guess usually the fatal mistake is killing the person.
That's right. Yeah. That's
killing the person.
No, I'm sorry, he made one mistake, did he? You don't think the murder was the mistake?
Ah, well, I suppose
this
two.
Guy...
Fatal mistakes. I mean, really, one was fatal, and then the other one was just a mistake that got him caught.
Yes.
He's not dead or anything, is he? Not a very good detective.
Do we have any words from a listener, Alistair?
Oh, Andy, I'm so glad that you would ask that, because I don't know if you know this, but... after we come up with a certain number of ideas, we get words from a listener, which is a Patreon supporter who's donated $3 to our Patreon. And
I love that about them.
Andy, today's listener, you'll be happy to hear, is Adrian Hernandez Arista.
Adrian Hernandez Arista. We're in lockdown right now. Hearing your name, I feel like I'm on a tropical beach on the moon.
You almost said the word Latin.
Did I?
Yeah, I think so. I think hearing your la name.
Yeah, right. La name.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No. I mean, it's okay. I mean, the name does come across as Latin.
Ah, yes. Roman. Ancient Roman.
Caesar, the Hernandez Caesar. All right. Thank you, Adrian. God bless you. And also opposite God bless you for those who don't believe in any kind of God. It's a God that we've put through the conceptual inverter, and it's correct. it's a scientific curse. It's just a genderless mortal. And so, Andy, do you want to try and guess Adrian's three words?
Limp. Hey? Limp. Limp.
No, it's anti, A-N-T-I.
Okay.
Do you want to try and guess the next one?
Limpet.
No, Andy, you're too L heavy today. It's the second word is anti, A-N-T-Y.
Anti. Okay, great. Can I guess the third word?
Yeah.
Is it anti, A-N-T-E?
Andy, you have guessed the third word incorrectly. No, the third word is auntie.
Oh, fuck.
Because he was fucking with you.
Yeah, he really was. And he got me real good. I really thought I'd got one there.
Oh, it was so close.
Auntie. Yeah. So this is to be the idea of being against somebody's insectoid aunt. You know, a small, six-legged...
Yeah.
Aren't.
Aren't.
Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, like aren't. Like mother's sister or something, or father's sister.
Mm, a real mother-sister.
You mother-sister.
I'm going to start calling aunts that.
Do you think... I don't know. I mean, you know, it's like, I guess it makes me think about the book, the Kafka book where the guy's the bug.
Oh, yeah, of course. Metamorphosis.
And it kind of makes me think that I think if it was like your uncle or aunt who was turning into a bug, it's something you almost would expect of an aunt, uncle or aunt.
Yeah, I mean, uncles and aunts definitely, you know, they are very often, I think, both in popular culture and, you know, in general people's lives, they do tend to push the boundaries of what's socially acceptable, it seems like, a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And I think what it is they... You see them in relation to your parents, and growing up, you regard your parents as being totally normal, right? That's sort of your definition of normal. And then you... But your parents have... historical and personal conflicts and all sorts of things with these aunts, but then that they're still very close to and attached to you, so you see them often. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just a very, you know, you throughout your early life and you're coming into awareness and coming into adulthood, you're really exposed to, you know, quite intimately to people who are often quite different or just interesting.
Well, yeah, and I think that they're also kind of these adults who you're close enough to them because of your parents to see all the weirdnesses of them.
Yes, that's what it is.
Yeah. And so you know you're on the inner circle. And so you get to know the true thing, whereas everybody else hides it from strangers and stuff, like hides a lot of those things from strangers.
It's people just who are family, just... isn't it? It's just...
And so you get to know people's weird stuff. And then, so if, like, let's say, you know, my dad's sister just decided she was starting to convert herself into a beetle. and it's like, oh, jeez.
Auntie. But you'd have to hear all about it, and she, you know,
and then she'd be coming around, and we all have to pretend like we think it's great.
And
she scuttles now.
And also, I think as she does this, she probably has less and less contact with some of her normal friends and that sort of thing, and therefore will probably rely on your family for more.
Yeah.
Contact and support and that sort of thing. So you really will bear the brunt, I think, a lot of your aunt turning into an aunt.
And so so your parents are like, all right, Glendoa is coming over today, and she's just had those sort of back panels and wings installed, and she wants to try them out on our property. And so she's standing on your balcony, and she kind of like. Opens them up and they start to flutter, and then she jumps and she kind of, you know, she
falls into the vegetable patch.
Yeah, and then you're like, come everybody, help Glendoa.
Yeah, and you've got to try and stay positive and tell her.
Oh, that was really good.
But
and
also,
I guess you're still not old enough to realize, you know, to realize, to relate to an adult and understand why they're sad, so sad that they need to, they need to be a beetle right now. Like, you know, if once, you know, 20 years from now, you'll be able to sort of relate to that. And you go, yeah, I think I could understand why I would want to escape this humanly form. But does that feel like a sketch?
Yeah. You know, I think ants supposedly can carry, you know, 20 times their own weight. But yeah. I think actually a lot of the burden probably falls onto the family.
Onto the family. A lot of the emotional burden falls onto the family.
Yeah.
I think that's
beautiful.
I think that's a sketch. I think so. I think I'll better take us to through this episode, which is episode 249, Andy. That means that we are only 51 episodes away from having to do our 300th episode.
Don't you dare talk to me about this. Don't, it's considered, actually, it's very impolite to bring that kind of thing up in our culture.
And yeah. Well, I apologize. Well, I mean, last week was the, you know, it was exactly 1 year away. So that
horrifying.
Means 1 year away from our own deaths. Thank you, Adrian, for those words.
I can't believe it.
Yeah.
Like 2 weeks. I've now started to measure time by how often we have to put out the yellow recycling bin.
Yeah.
And you know, I know those are 2 weeks apart, but I swear it's happening every second day at the moment. It's not.
Yeah. Well, and that's the same thing with these, you know, 100th episodes, is that they
cover
almost the almost 2 years that come that are between them feels like it's flying by.
This,
how has it been a
definitely
year?
Definitely hastening my death in many ways.
All right. Here's the sketches for today. Conceptual inverter. Ah, great idea. Who's your...
Great idea. Easy to achieve.
Very easy. Well, I mean, we did a sketch at the comedy festival that wasn't that different from this, but that was the thing that, you know, the
you
build...
You can draw
the
anything and it'll make it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah,
you can make
sketch.
This work. We got who's your long lost dead ancestor. We got two Gaias. New Gaia comes around and they do battle. We got the Marinara Trench.
Great.
It's really a
seafood sketch.
Yeah, I mean it's really a, you know, a meal idea. But then we got the off the grid new T-shirt guy, which he gets from eating, you know, food challenges, but then also the Terminator's first draft, where he shows up in the world and I need your eating competition. Then we've got a comedy club that has a 12 prawn cocktail minimum.
Yeah,
we got stabbing them with a knife made of their own blood. That's a, I mean, I've been thinking about it. I love those riddles. They're one of my favorite things, that those things, it's like somebody standing near their, you know, their mailbox and they're dead.
What happened?
What happened? I know. And you're just given this tiny amount of information and then they give this information to you like you should be able to have got it from them. That's a Twitter account. It's a Twitter account that we could do easily.
Yeah.
And it's just called, you know, Riddles. Great Riddles. And
yeah, that's a great concept.
Yeah.
Do people try and guess in the
in the
replies, and you're always like, no.
No. I guess you give them a day.
Yeah.
And then you read through them to make sure that you don't write the same one as they did.
Nobody's allowed to ever get it right.
Yeah. A vulture died in their ass. And then they were killed by the sort of the toxic shock.
Ha ha ha! Oh, Christ.
I'm sorry. Then we have Beetle Aunt, which is just your dad's sister's slowly turning herself into a beetle. We all have to bear witness. We'll go into the song. Bitch, 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 bitch,
and no one's ever done a remix. No one's ever done a I mean, what's going on?
It's crazy. It's crazy. It's like people don't love, they don't want to win a music award. Thank you very much for listening to the podcast. I'm Andy and Alistair, and you can follow us on Twitter. You can follow us at Two and Tank, and you can follow me at Alistair TB.
How about stupid old Andy?
You can follow us on Instagram at Two and Tank. You can follow me on Instagram at Alistair A Trombley Virtual.
You can click on that link that's down there, and then you can watch Magma.
You can get Magma. You can review us. Gosh, we love reviews. Go now. Are you in isolation? Go, review.
What else are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
Spend a day on it. Really pour a lot of yourself into this review.
Pour. Do some pouring. Spread some love, you know. You don't have to upgrade who you are. Just, you know, just do some writing. Anyway, who cares? Thank you very much. And you can support us on Patreon if you like, you know. When work dries up, that definitely keeps us alive a lot. Thank you so much to everybody who does. Gosh, you're all gods amongst garbage.
Are they gods amongst other gods?
Gods amongst other gods. Anybody who listens is a god.
Yeah. God.
Yeah, there is only one god.
How about this as a concept? How about this as a sketch idea? The God Park, right? It's a dog park, but you go there and it's just people walking their gods, and they're all on leads and they're running around and fighting, I guess. And
that they're sniffing each other and getting on, getting along. And some are rooting. One's turning himself into a swan and humping people.
Anyway,
I think that's an idea. Did you want me to write it down?
Zeus.
God Park. All right. Look, I'll write it down.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Thanks, Al.
No worries. Thank you, Andy. And we
love
you.
Bye. Dog Park is crap god backwards.
Crap god. You're right. Crap dog it. See ya.
Bye.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates. It's not optional. You have to do it. We used to go easy on it, but now you have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.